All right. So, that being said, we're now going to have our what we call the afterburn. I don't know that a lot of teachers do this, and I don't say this so that you think I'm be impressed with me. I just always thought it was important, and I get a little disappointed when other teachers don't do it. I think that every teacher out there should teach and then allow people to ask them questions. Because after all, how do I as a teacher, the Q&A you think is for you, it's also for me. I need to know if you understood what I said. And based on your questions, I understand how much you understood what I said. And so this helps me as much as you, just so you understand that. Which is why I started doing it in the beginning of my ministry, is that I would, listen, in the beginning, when everybody out there had never heard anything I said, and mostly I got this, you know, that blank look, you know, like deer in the headlights, cricket sounds, you know, when I was finished, I needed to know, did you guys get that? And so I said, anybody want to ask a question? And that's when we started doing this. So we're going to begin for a change with Janet.
I love what you said about inner man. I was just wondering about that part. When you were talking about trials, trials are there to show you your weaknesses, but also your strengths. And so, but then it took me to this verse in Corinthians, you know, when it says, no trial has overtaken you except such as is common to man. And Elohim is trustworthy, who shall not allow you to be tried beyond what you are able, but with the trial shall also make this way of escape enable you to bear it. So I was thinking that Abba, in his wisdom and mercy and compassion for us, that he will show us the areas where we are struggling, but also that he will give us the opportunity to overcome it
right, as
we are walking through the trials.
Okay, I want you to understand in the verse that she quoted, it says that he will provide a way of escape. It didn't say he would remove the problem. Did you follow that? Now, picture what you might picture in your mind when you hear the word escape. I picture some of the, you know, spy intrigue TV shows and movies where somebody gets tied up and they have a little something and they break out of their bonds and they escape. Or they're caught in a landslide and all of a sudden they see some light somewhere and they have to pull the rocks away and they find a way to escape. It's never an easy thing. There's stuff they have to do, but a way of escape is provided. It's not, and he shall remove, like, well, he doesn't give you something so difficult you can't handle and then he'll just remove it from you. But he's going to provide a way for you if you do the things he shows you that you can then escape. Just keep that in mind. I think it's something I don't think I've really talked about before, but when you said it, I kind of thought, maybe we need to talk about that. Okay? What else?
And so we need to be encouraged that the way of escape is there, and also trusting that if we work on our inner man, we should get to what you said, right? The whole process, the inner man and the spirit, dwelling in us with the Ruach and eventually becoming him, which is our goal. So when I was thinking about that, when you were saying that we will become him, that that's our goal, does that happen in our, I know we in our lifetime, in our flesh, we cannot be like him, but we should expect as we put our flesh and everything under his submission to him, that at the end of our lives we will be close enough and that the rest will be in his image.
All right, look, this is a place that I guess we can't avoid going emotionally and mentally. Stop the mindset of worrying about what if I don't do enough? Because people think, Rabbi, but you teach that if we don't do enough, we don't get in. I never said that. I said, do everything with all your effort, and Abba will work out how that all plays out. Maybe you need some millennium time to finish the process, whatever it is. Okay, if you don't understand what that's all about, then listen to the Millennium and Kingdom teaching. But you just do with what he's given you the best you can do. Everything else is in his hands. Remember, he doesn't want to keep you out. He wants you to get in. So he's not going to find all kinds of reasons to keep you out. If you've done everything the best you can, with all the effort you can, because he wants you in. It says, it is Elohim's desire, if possible, this is I'm quoting from Scripture, that all men be saved and end up in the kingdom. Well, it just says that all men be saved. In other words, that they end up at the point of being saved. Because remember, saved is not what Christianity talks about. That's why you have to go to the Are You Saved teaching. Yeshua provided salvation. That's not the same as that ultimate being saved. Remember, salvation is the avoidance of the second death. The avoidance of the death. And it's his desire that all be saved. But not all will avoid the second death because not all will do the things necessary. Yeshua did his part. It's now possible to not die. It wasn't before. Now it is. Praise Yah for that. I mean, without that, there's nothing. So let's not minimize that ever. I mean, that's without that, we're wasting our time. But it's his desire that all be saved, which means that you just do the best you can. He wants you to make it and called you knowing you can from the starting point that you're at. I say this all the time, and please, just play that over and over, like in a loop or something. He called you from the moment he opened your eyes and your ears, knowing that from that moment, you can do the walk that's necessary to be worthy of well done, good and trustworthy servant. You can do this. Well, how do I know if I've done enough? Don't leave anything on the field, as they say in sports. All right? Don't hold anything back. Do it. He says he wants you to love him with all. Don't hold anything back. Do it with everything you've got. Does that answer the question? Okay. Okay, Frederick?
So something I think clicked a little bit. I've heard you repeat that, so the Torah serves all these purposes and you wrap up so you become him. And that there's two ideas that I had in my mind that finally clicked as being separate. We never become his role.
No.
We become his character so that we do our role as he would do it if he was in our role.
Well said.
So that we understand the height, the depth, the length, the
yes,
of his role and our role.
Beautifully
said. And we fill it completely.
Beautifully
our
said.
Role we fill completely.
Right.
And right now we're a long ways from filling our role.
There you go. Okay. I was filling mine too well and I had looser clothing. It was just I'm more filled than I need to be. With myself anyway. So. But no, that was beautifully said, okay? You're wanting to become him, not his role, not his job or his authority, but his mindset, his behavior, the way he would approach things. You want his character. So if he was in your shoes, what would that look like? How would he be acting and making decisions and what his choices would be in situations and those kind of things? Absolutely, very beautifully said. Okay, Rob.
Terry Zimmerman says, what does one immersion mean in verse 5? The initial change of status when our eyes are open, question, or immersed as in dying to the old man?
Okay, one immersion, it's not real clear here. I'll give you my best sort of insight and guess here. Look, think about when you talk about using the word immersed, okay? You can be immersed in your work. You can be immersed in a hobby. You can get immersed in a game you're playing. You get immersed in a relationship. Okay, in other words, it's all encompassing. Like when you get immersed, you go under the water. That's why I never understood how people thought immersion was just like sprinkling some water on your head, okay? You're going into something fully. He said there's one immersion here. You're only going to go into this. Not 15 other belief systems or whatever else is going on, but you're going to be immersed in this. Plus, if you understand the 8 declarations that I have you do when we do immersion, there's only one. You can't do that same thing, those 8 declarations. You can't make them from more than one place. You're saying that, you know, because you're declaring that you're going to put aside everything that you've ever had before, all authorities, including self-sovereignty, and come completely under him. And then you're going to go get immersed. So that would be my best guess there. Okay, what's else? What else?
Okay, from First Love, it says, how do we measure what our quote-unquote talents are and so we can grow them/it? I've never understood how that plays out, and I'm wanting to stay in.
Okay, look, this, I don't know where this comes from because I wasn't really ever in mainstream Christianity, but I think it comes probably from there. this whole idea of trying to figure out gifts and talents and all this stuff. You know, when somebody does something they're talented at, it flows easily. They're great at it. It's natural. It has that ease to it. You understand what I'm saying? Stop thinking about trying to figure out from a spiritual point of view, you know. I'm not picking on you like you're doing that. Well, it just seems to me that, you know, this idea of figuring out our gifts. Some of you are just naturally good at certain things. Well, all of you are naturally good at certain things. But I watch people naturally great at things that I struggle with. And I just say, I don't know how they do that, but they have a talent for it. Okay? You know, I don't have a talent necessarily to play the drums. I played them today, and I played them, I guess, good enough to get it done. But I've watched other people with a talent for it, and it's a whole different thing. Do you see what I'm saying? So use that like as an example. You've seen people do things because you've gone to, you know, vendors for things, whether it would be doctors, lawyers, plumbers, carpenters, mechanics for your car. And some of them, you notice, are incredibly talented. And others kind of get the job done because they learn how to do it, but they're not that talented. You know, I've seen this even in the serving industry. You know, I've seen some very talented wait staff at restaurants. I've seen some very not talented ones who just, they made it look easy. So think about the things that you do that are easy for you. Don't think about whether or not other people struggle. Well, that may be where you have a talent. Maybe it's easy for you to sit with people socially and just listen. It's not easy for me. Okay? I struggle with that. I want to leave the room when it's just people sitting and chit-chatting and socializing because I don't know how to find that rhythm because I don't have any of that blue. See, you guys think I pick on the blues all the time. I envy you a lot of times for a lot of things, you know, when it comes to the, you know, the color personality thing, you know, with the color code, the blues, because you guys can sit there and just have a great time socially in ways that I don't have any talent or ability to do. So think about when you're with people, what is it that you do that other people benefit from, that you do well and easily? You know? We know some people that have a talent for cars that when somebody has something go wrong, they're happy to walk over and look at it and listen and check things out, and they do that without any issues and they don't struggle with it. I don't even know how to change my own oil. Actually, I do, but just barely. Well, I can change the oil. Don't ask me to find the filter and get that out, but okay? But do you understand what I'm saying? You need to look at, as you're going through life, what do I do that I don't struggle with? But Rabbi, I struggle with everything. No, you don't. You're just focusing on the things you struggle with. You don't struggle with everything. But your struggle distracts you from the things that you're actually very good at. Let me say that again, because that may be real important. You may feel like you struggle with everything, but you don't. But because you do struggle, and those struggles may be very emotional for you, it's hard for you to pay attention to those things that you don't struggle with because your mind is so occupied with the fact that you're struggling with those other things. So hopefully that answers the question a little bit. Amy.
Shabbat shalom, Rabbi.
Shabbat shalom.
Okay. So I have so many thoughts. I'll try to get this out in a good manner, I guess. So first of all, you know, I never even read the Bible till I was 40 or 41. And even when I went to church when I was 40, they didn't even tell you how to have a Bible. So when I learned, you know, from a TV evangelist, I'm supposed to read the Bible, I thought, I don't even know where to buy one. But when I started reading it, you know, of course, when you're in Christianity, you're in the New Testament, you know, I'm just reading it for what it says, and I'm like, wow, this is really serious, you know. And I thought about the apostles, and I'm a studier. And, you know, they were all murdered. They were tortured in various ways that were just really horrendous. But they have what you're saying that we need to have, which is a mindset. And so now, you know, I've been with you, going on 6 years now, I think, listening, learning, and applying what you said. And I've come out of a lot of mindsets, which to me is captured in chapter 4, verse 14. You know, there was these different teachings I had, tricks of men, cleverness, a lot of lies I was told, right? So I had these beliefs, and they were wrong. And I didn't know how to get past certain things in my life, but only through the teachings that you were giving me, which is out of the truth of the scripture, you know, plus all of the knowledge that you have from the different skills that you've acquired over the years and the wisdom you've learned by applying those things yourself and seeing the beneficial results. So I hope that kind of encapsulates what I'm trying to say.
No, it's a very heartfelt
thank you. And because one of my questions when I was in Christianity was like, wow, this is like, I see this is so serious. And I see, you know, like, how am I ever going to think like these apostles did, you know, who were tortured and murdered and they weren't afraid. They were singing, they were praising, they were thanking, you know, God and everything. And I'm like, how the heck am I going to get there? I'm terrified. You know, I don't even know how to think like that. Well, they don't teach you that in Christianity, but that's what you're teaching us, right? You are teaching us, especially you put it together really well, in my estimation, during Rosh Chodesh service, you know, with having the heart and the mind, right? We need to have our emotions and our mind. I can't repeat it right. I understood
right.
It correctly.
Awesome.
But that's what we need to do. And to me, that's what they had. They had the truth, which you've been giving us, plus the mindset. And that gave them the strength, like Rav Shaul was saying, to be able to endure everything that was thrown at them. And who knows what's coming at us? We don't really know, because I still think verse 4:14 doesn't apply just with people who say they're teaching Torah, but the worldly men. You know what I mean? We're in this world. We're not supposed to be like it, though. But, you know, at work, I have to listen to all this garbage that everybody else has to listen to, and it can play on your mind if you let it.
Sure.
And so with what you've been teaching us, that's going to help us be strong so we don't buy into that garbage that's being spewed.
Excellent.
Yes?
Excellent. Yes.
Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. Look, and I didn't really touch on this verse very much because I ran out of time, but in verse 14, you know, doesn't it take trickery of men and cleverness and craftiness, etc., to convince people that Shabbat got moved to Sunday, or to convince people that Christmas is actually in the Bible somewhere, or to, you know, use Ishtar instead of Passover? I mean, it takes these things, or to get you to believe the law was done away with. This is now, but I want you to hear all that, but don't miss the point that the people doing it at this point. Now, it might have been craftiness when it first was crafted, you know. They're doing it sincerely. Most of those teachers that you had in mainstream Christianity believe every word they're saying and meant it, mean it sincerely. And so some of you read this and going, oh, well, I can pick out tricky, crafty people. No, whoever started it at the beginning may have been that way, but the people perpetuating it through time are genuinely already bought into the lies. It's our fathers' inherited lies. And they very sincerely perpetuated the lies. And then they come into an eye-opening, ear-opening experience and realize that they were lied to, but they still bring some of it with them. And you got to be very careful about that and listen for that and look for that as you're hearing the Mesocostals and the Mesobaptists and the Mesolutherans and just the mess. And so that's why you got to find the fivefold guys to help you to avoid a lot of that. So, because remember, it says the reason these guys exist is so that you will no longer be borne about and affected by those guys who are doing the tricky stuff. But I don't want you to think it's only referring to the people that are currently actively thinking they're clever and tricky. No, the guys who started the process were being more clever and tricky. Other people just bought into it as being true and kept perpetuating it. So you want to see some of the tricky guys, go back to the early church fathers. Okay, there's some very tricky guys. And they're held up to such high esteem by the mainstream church. But they were all raging lunatic pagans who happened to also like the idea of Messiah. Just read. So you think I'm being mean. No, you go read Marcion, and you go read Origen, and you go read all of these early church fathers. These guys were crazy. Anti-Semitic to the core, okay? And each one thought the other one was, you know, demon-possessed. Each one thought that nobody, they didn't like each other at all, okay? And yet they perpetuated or initiated what then came down through the centuries. And it might have been the Catholic Church in their cleverness, as people want to give them a lot of credit for. So let's go ahead and give them some cleverness credit, because they're the ones that moved Saturday to Sunday. But the people still teaching it aren't being clever. They're just being mouthpieces like parrots parroting it back out. So don't think that this is about, well, I would know if somebody's being clever. They're not being clever. They're being sincere. The cleverness was in getting this to be delivered sincere. Who's that clever? I think we can think of the adversary as being that clever. Okay? So I just wanted to throw that out there so we're clear. Hey, and welcome.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi, for this teaching.
No problem.
If my voice is shaky or if my hand is quivering, you just know that I'm nervous. The first question, actually, it was a comment. I have two comments and two questions. When you said about working on the inner man and reminding myself about everything, like what I mentioned to you in counseling, I'm not going to say what it is, but about that, I remember a long time ago when I was 14 and I was going through a lot of depression and everything that was happening. And then I remember myself being pushed in Christianity, not messianic, Torah observance. I was pushed into it. And then I remember what you said in the middle of the teaching. You said that you have to read, not just reading and praying will get you there. And I was like, wait, that's all I did back when I was 14. So in my mind changed. But I had realized that I was taking verses and then repeating them, and that was changing my mind and all of that. So, and I remember I would go to church and I would tell them, I was like, oh, at this one point, I remember a long time ago, I was like, oh, God took my thoughts in my kitchen. I remember when it happened, the moment. And I hadn't realized that it was actually I think it was just myself, and I was just, my brain was like, okay, you're feeding me good things, so I'm gonna, you know, think good now. So I thought that was cool. And the question that I had, if I say something that's like, you already said it and explained it, my mind kind of wanders sometimes in teaching.
Okay.
So yeah.
That's okay. I threw a lot out there. I don't expect people to remember all of it and kind of right. They have to go back and listen again.
Okay. You said, how can we live, like, how can we, like, live together forever if we don't like each other? I remember a long time ago, people would tell me, like, there's going to be a moment when we're all perfected and all of that's going to change. So in my brain, I'm like, okay, why do we need to push toward that if we are going to be perfected? Is that like...
Okay, keep it by your mouth.
Okay, if we are going to be perfected, like, how is that... Like, how does that work?
Okay, again, that's a good question. Look, this is where people struggle. You're here, and you know you're going to be there. You're going to go from this mess that we are now to being perfected. Everything we talked about today is understanding that there's a process to go through, and there are people to help you go through the process. But nobody really wants to generally focus on that, because it's like, well, I'm not worried about the forever, because we're going to all be perfected. No, it's not like, because they're expecting some sort of magic hand waving thing and then poof, everybody's perfected now. Then why make us go through all of this? Okay, there's no point. You're going through this because if you go through this correctly, it does the perfecting. It's a process that does the perfecting. So, but because you were talking to people that they're thinking, why do I need to worry about anything? Well, of course we're going to live together. We're all going to be perfect then. Well, yes, that's true. But you're not thinking about the process necessary to make it happen, so you may not be there. Okay? Did that answer the question?
Yeah, that did. Okay, and then you said, could you explain this better? You said, at a point, our weakness breaks in the middle. What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't remember saying it. Okay, so I said a lot of stuff, and it's not in the notes here, except I just was reading from Ephesians. You know, if you are weak, oh, I know what I was talking about. Okay, I was giving the examples. You know, if you've got a weak spot in anything that you, that's physical, if anything ever goes wrong, it tends to go wrong where the weakness is, the weak spot. Okay? Things break at the weak point. Things tear at the weak point. And so in you, you have the same thing. You fall into those places where you break and you end up in all kinds of trouble because there was a weak spot there. Because you may think, generally speaking, I've got my temper under control and I'm great. Until that someplace when you have a weak point in your personality that can trigger that, all of a sudden you explode. Because it found the weak spot. Hasatan spends all his time looking for your weak spots. And don't get upset about that. That's his job. Okay? And Yahweh works, allows that to happen because it's useful in helping you deal with your stuff. And don't get mad at him. That's, you know, part of the way it works. But Hasatan, that's his job, is to find things that he can accuse you of or accuse you to the Father and bring out that you struggle with, and all the, which is basically all your weak spots. Because if you don't have a weak spot, it's like I used to use the example of, you know, there are those out there that struggle. I use the example, simple example of alcohol, where if they would have one drink, they could be right into a whole alcoholic binge thing because they're alcoholics. That's their weakness. Whereas I've never had that problem. I could have a beer and not want a second one. Like, that's normal for me. I would never want it. I don't even really like to drink, period. Just, I've never acquired the taste, but it doesn't affect me. Where other person would have one, if they have one, they're having six. Okay? Or three or whatever it is. They're going to have a bunch of them. Because there's a weakness there. Now, by the way, I have weaknesses that my alcoholic friend who I'm talking about, whoever that might be, doesn't have. And so whatever that weakness is in me, that person probably has no problem with that area. Okay? And so we each have our own weak spots, and Hasatan helps to bring them out so that we can deal with them. So as far as break, it means that's the place where the thing is going to go bad enough that you recognize something has to get fixed. So not broken like as in, I'm a broken human being, but broken as in, oh, wow, I need to fix this. Something just broke.
Okay, that makes sense. And then my last comment is when you said that, because I, what you said about salvation, I was like, oh, my gosh, that makes sense. That salvation is not us being, you know, that's just our ticket into eternal life, not eternal life being salvation. So
good.
That makes sense in my brain. And then I was thinking about, I just wanted to see if this was like a bad thought to have. When Adam and Eve were in the garden and Eve ate the fruit from the tree, that point where we all fell and that was like cut off, I remember reading that the tree, the other tree that gave us life, was next to it or near it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, we were so like, it was like that place where we're like, she had a chance to eat from that one too, right? So it was like that one, she was like so close to it. So that point of salvation where you said that reminded me that she was so near that, but she chose death at that point. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. And by the way, let that be also encouraging to the rest of the young people here. You know, because she did mention that she's counseled with me. And you know, you don't need to be like old and married and have 14 kids or something to counsel. I mean, you could just, you know, recognize that you need to have a relationship. You know, if you're at least, you know, an older teenager, but especially certainly once you're 20 and older, I mean, you certainly should have a relationship with one of these fivefold people. And I've counseled some of the teenagers too, where they've needed to talk about some things. And so, you know, that's a good thing. And I think that I forgot that we had talked about some of the things that actually came up today. So that actually worked out, you know, because that was a while ago. But, you know, it's the same thing that teaching I did today was something that I had explained in a previous council session. But I'm always excited when the young ones come up. And we're going to bring another young one up here. Chris, come up. You're next. Oh, I'm sorry. Wayne's next. He was sitting. So I see you standing. Okay, so we're bringing another young one up. Wayne. And listen, I'm older than him anyway, so to me he's young. Okay, so.
Well, Lynette, for the last week or so, I have actually been trying to figure out a way to strengthen what kind of man am I supposed to be. I have four little ones coming up, and I want to be a good role model for them. and know what a real man is. And with that, the very first verse that comes to my mind is in 1 Kings in chapter 2 when it says, this is the Dawid talking to Shlomo. And he's saying, and the day of David drew near to die, and he commanded Shlomo, his son, saying this, I am going the way of all the earth, and you shall be strong and be a man. Now be a man. So this is how we are to be a man. So we are to be a man and guard the charge of Yahweh, your Elohim, to walk in his ways, to guard his laws, his commands, his right rulings, and his witness, as is written in the Torah of Moshe. Now, reading that really makes a lot of sense when I go back to Ephesians. When it says that to be strengthened in inner man through his spirit is the essence, the character of who he is, which we learn that through Torah. Torah is the spirit of Yahweh. So seeing them two together, it really makes sense. It's living out Torah. It's guarding the Torah. It's everything about Torah.
Amen.
And you go on and you just look at it, that the Messiah might dwell in your hearts through belief. Well, we know our hearts is our emotions, it's our desires. So through living Torah and everything else, we develop that desire in our hearts for Messiah. Well, what is Messiah? Messiah is Yeshua. What is Yeshua? Torah. We start building that desire for Torah in our hearts. And it says through belief. And the belief is the thought process. So how it's all coming together in that aspect, and it's just amazing. I really needed to hear this because this is what I was searching for like a week and a half now. And I thank you.
Appreciate that. Appreciate it. And we also appreciate that you single-handedly have decided to provide the future generation of young ladies with men. So half of MTY is going to be related to Wayne at some point. He's got all boys. And a lot of them, you know. So anyway, I couldn't resist that.
Okay, from Avril says, should we become him or like him in our character? Example, he can make the blind see, the deaf hear, etc. Is that when I become him, I can do the same as well?
Okay, let's go back to what was said by Frederick, which was, that's his role, not your role. It's the character part. So when you have things happen in your life, you know, how would his mind think about it and make the choices? How would he make decisions? What would he do? You know, I know it was very popular in the 90s there where they had the WWJD bracelet stuff, right? Well, you know, you should be asking yourself, what would Yeshua do? What would he do in this situation? What would he be thinking? How would he handle it? How would he approach it? And I think that was, you know, so I understand the effort of what that whole bracelet was about. Only problem is that none of them that made that bracelet had any idea what Messiah would actually do. Because if they're only focusing on the Christian idea of Messiah in the form of this Jesus, in the form of whatever the Catholic Church gave them, and then, of course, they're like, oh, no, I was in Protestant churches. And then you very nicely believed the Catholic Church's Sunday and Christmas and things. How much did you protest anyway? It seems like you didn't protest all that much. You just didn't like the Pope having authority. That's what you protested. Okay, so let's just be honest about these things. And so my answer is no, the proof is not in that you're doing the things Yeshua did. Those are his role to do. The proof will be that you're thinking like him and making decisions like him. Okay, next.
Okay, from, says just me, says what can I do to get beyond my weakness of not liking the thought of being controlled? Says my issue is more with people, not Yahweh.
Okay, I'm not really sure what to make of what you're actually. Sometimes you got to understand when I'm listening to what they say, but also I'm trying to hear what they're actually saying or what they're trying to say. So most people I run into seem to have a control issue of some sort. They don't want to be controlled. And actually, I think a lot of them have a problem because they're not actually in control. See, if you're in control, you're not afraid of others trying to control you because you have the authority and you have the control. You have that in a place that's healthy. I'm calling this a healthy control. But people that are often manipulated and pushed around and shoved around and that kind of thing are the ones that tend to a lot of times end up having a problem with authority and control because they don't know how to submit on purpose and stand up against when necessary because they don't have that control. And so they're afraid of authority. They're afraid of submission. Why would you be afraid of submitting to that which you choose to submit to? I get why you have a problem submitting to that which is imposed on you. You notice that nowhere in Scripture does Yahweh impose anything. He offered them an opportunity for a relationship called covenant and said, if you want this relationship, then you have to self-impose submission to trusting and doing everything I say. And so I think when I repackaged this a while back, I used to say, you know, that the idea of submission was just getting rid of self and then being able to, you know, submit yourself. But you know what? You need to get totally self-sovereign first before you can actually submit yourself. And I said that a few years back. I used to tell everybody that self-sovereignty is the problem and get off the throne and everything else. And that's all still true. But you know what? Get on the throne first. Get your mother, your brother, your sister, your cousin, all of the culture, all of the Christianity, all that other stuff that's residing on the throne of your head and your heart and ruling over you, kick that all out and you sit down and say, okay, nobody else is in charge. I'll choose who to submit to. And then you need to choose to submit to him and the authority structure he's put together, etc. But you can't do that when you're not actually in charge of you. And a lot of you have a problem where your lives are out of control and you're being manipulated and pushed around by everybody. Or you have an out of control or out of balance pleaser problem. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing to be a pleaser. Okay, I think it's actually a really good trait. But it could really be a horrible handicap because you can't do what you want to do because you're always worried about pleasing everybody. And you'll never really get anywhere if all you are worried about always is whether or not everybody's going to approve of it and you have to please everybody. But my mother doesn't agree, or my son, my daughter, my brother, my whatever. Stop trying to please all of them. Please him. You only have to please one, okay? And so let's be careful with that. So I'm going to say the answer to that is you have to get self-sovereign first. But don't get on that throne and get comfortable, okay? But kick everybody else out, okay? You do not have authority over me. Okay, it'd be like if you never left your parents' house and let them have authority over you forever. Because some of you have that problem. Some of you I've talked to, maybe not in here, you're married, you have children, and you're still in your parents' house, and your parents are still messing with your family and your marriage. I can't believe I have those conversations, but I have had them in the past more than I would like to. That a husband and wife are living in one parent or the other parent's house on purpose, by choice. They don't need to be there because one or the other is still tied to the umbilical cord or something. And so they're not making the right decisions because mommy didn't like it or daddy didn't like it and was pushing and controlling everything from the outside. And it's like, no, you need to get out of the house and make your own decisions. This is why we as parents afford your children a place to be as long as they want to be there, but push them to make their own choices and to work it to the point where they can get out. Okay, getting out is what they need to do. They can only grow so much in your house. They will stagnate otherwise and fall into all kinds of bad habits, entitlement and all those other things. Or if that doesn't happen, you'll do nothing but fight. Because two adults in the house is the maximum. Anything more than that doesn't work. Anybody disagree with me? It doesn't work. You will not have shalom in the home with three adults or four or five or whatever else you want to put in there. Because it's not designed that way. It's hard enough to have shalom with two. And now you want to add a third one to the mix. Well, that works real well. Okay? And so we have to get to that place of owning me. I have to own me before I can submit it to you. Otherwise, you can't really submit to me because there's other people ruling your head. So now you need their permission and stuff. Okay? take over the authority and then submit under the Creator. Okay, so you have that properly. All right, one more, Rob.
Okay, this is from Chris. It's a little long, but it says, so you're saying how to strengthen the inner man is through prayer, reading the Word, and having emunah that all trials are given by the Father to strengthen us, and a committed mindset that says, I won't give up. How does the verse, I can do all things through Yeshua who strengthens me, come in? It says, I'm confused on the quote-unquote how to strengthen the inner man. Can you give any specific example what it means to exercise the weakness?
All right. Well, you asked like four things, but we'll kind of go through them. Okay. First of all, I kind of said almost the opposite of what you started with, which is I said that, yes, prayer and reading is part of it, but it's the structure of the chapter four or fivefold guys that are there to help it guide you and instruct you in all the things I've been doing for the last couple of months has been teaching you how to strengthen the inner man, all from this teaching. Okay? And then you take the things I'm telling you and start applying them. How do you strengthen the inner man? I just told you one of the things is kick everybody else off the throne. How can you have strength in the inner man when everybody else is running the show? There's lots of things that have to do with that. Okay? Now, so what point I was trying to make was, yes, prayer does help. Reading does help. They are necessary. They have purposes. But you can do all that and get nowhere with strengthening the inner man unless you have a additional element of teaching and instruction that you can now pray and study to start taking effect with, which is the doing, the things that you can do to work out the inner man and make it stronger. Now, Abba will cause trials for you to give you opportunities to do that. You say, I want patience. Father, give me patience. He'll give you stuff to get you, drive you insane because you need to learn patience. See, you don't always understand that that's part of how he's going to give you what you ask for. I want patience, so I'm going to keep giving you things that are going to try your patience till you figure it out. I want peace. He's going to put you in chaos nonstop until you find a way to have peace. Because it's part of how he instructs you. He gives you the opportunities to learn, to struggle, and look, I want to get strong, but I don't want to lift a lot of weights. Not going to happen. Okay? Or, and it doesn't have to be weights, but you can push around giant tires and whatever else, or you can push ups, or you can lift your own weight, but you still, I don't want to do the work. Well, you got to do the work to develop the inner man. You may need to listen to some personal development guys who could teach you how to strengthen whatever area you're weak in, because there are certain areas that you may say, maybe you have a fear problem, an insecurity problem, a depression problem, a coveting problem, an anger problem, whatever, just on and on and on. And then go study how to fix that. That's part of it. Now, how this fits into the verse, you know, I can do all things through Messiah who strengthens me. It's 1,000,000% if you've been listening. I'm not saying the person wasn't listening. I'm saying if you've been listening and understanding what I'm saying to everything I just said, which in other words, I can do all things through the truth, the light, the Torah, etc. That strengthens me in my inner man because I did the exercise and I worked out and I strengthened it, and so I can do all things by bringing all of that in. So you see how that consistently fits into the same story. It's the same point. Not I can do all things because Messiah does it for me, which is what most people thought in Christianity. He strengthens me and does it and does. No. The more truth you have, you're stronger. The more light you have, you're stronger. The more Torah you have, which is all of that combined, you're stronger. You see, so when it says I can do all things through Messiah, to expand that. What is Messiah? I am the way, the truth, the life, the light, the word, the Torah. All those things. Well, through those things, I can do everything, right? I can do all things. All things are possible. Does that make sense? All right, one more, Rob.
Okay, from Anna Uden, says, should we take it as a sign to pursue a calling when others come to us? For example, people come to me often for advice or will share their life with me unprompted. Am I reading this too much?
No, I mean, you may have, you know, a gift that makes people feel comfortable to talk to you. And so you can think about all kinds of ways to apply that as a blessing to other people. It could be a career choice. I mean, you may be a fabulous, you know, hostess at an establishment where somebody has to welcome people and everything. You may be really, you know, fabulous at counseling or some other thing that requires the ability to have people be comfortable. Just think about all the things that you may like doing that involve people and them being comfortable to share with you. But you provide a blessing because people want to share and they're not always comfortable to share with everybody. So when they find someone that they can feel comfortable to share with, this is a blessing. It's a gift. Okay? All right? I don't have that. People are very uncomfortable sharing with me. You know, almost everybody that sits down to counsel me starts off with, I don't know where to start. And because they're uncomfortable. And when they're probably talking to Anna, they're probably like, blah, 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 blah. This naturally just flows out. And so, yeah. But just realize you don't have to have that particular gift to do some things that have to be done. But you could be very, very comforting to someone sitting at an oneg together at the meal after a service who needs to just have someone to talk to. You could be wonderfully available. People need friends. But not just friends, friends that are empathetic and sympathetic, which is probably one of your gifts, which is why people feel comfortable to talk to you, because you exude a certain amount of, I will be empathetic to your situation and have sympathy for it and be able to, you know, offer comfort or whatever it is. And that's why people feel comfortable. People aren't comfortable, you know why they're not comfortable talking to me? Because they know that they may not like what I ask them to do. When they're talking to you, Anna, they just want to share. And so they're very comfortable to do that. When they come to me, they're thinking, I don't know if I'm going to want to do whatever he says. He may ask me to do something to fix this problem or to handle something, and I'm not going to want to do it. Which I don't know why you're afraid of that, because after I tell you and you walk out of the room, I could care less what you do with it. I don't mean that in a wrong way. I'm saying I will have no thoughts and worries and concerns whether or not you followed my instruction. I gave you something, and you're either going to use it or you're not. So I don't know why you'd be afraid of what I'd ask you to do. I'll give you some suggestions and guidance, and either you'll do it or you won't. That's your choice. All right, over here, Chris.
So I was listening to the first version of Unity and Division in the Body of Messiah. You were talking about the paradigm shifts that you used to talk about, how you first know that there is Elohim, and then you learn about Torah, and you learn about that you're Israel. And then the fourth level is...
Growing up.
And this is...
I just wanted to show you guys that I knew what I said, just in case you were... I remember.
I loved how you connected chapter 3 and 4 with how there's the unity of belief and the completeness of Messiah and the perfecting... and then how that has to do with being strengthened in the inner man, which is all, it's all to this completeness. And it's like the spirit part versus the truth. And I find it's very interesting how both times, whether it's strengthened in the inner man, it's through his spirit, and right with the coming into unity and belief and knowledge, it's all right after he talks about the fivefold ministry. And just saying with my testimony, with having known the Bible to whatever extent, and when I was 14, I started keeping Torah and such, and 14, 15, but it wasn't what I have now with the teachings from you and the fivefold ministry and through the Spirit, because I know the Spirit really, back then, I wasn't really in that Spirit, like the flow from him through a teacher to me. I would read the whole book of Genesis, try to do that all at one time, and thought I could read or I could pray, and that could get me there. And then I found MTOI, and I did some growth. And then I had a time for a few years that I wasn't really part of MTOI, and then I've come back. So, like what you're talking about, your journey, I've had maybe something similar in having being part, and then not being part, and then part
back,
again.
Sure. Yeah.
And seeing the difference as being, this is where the Spirit is, and this is what's going to get me to that perfecting and that completeness that I can guard Torah, and I'd, you know, look at ministries' websites and do teachings on, okay, how do you keep the Sabbath and these different opinions of people, and maybe keep these commandments, but there's a whole different level. And I still thank Abba for this way, the spirit component that I was missing at different times. And now it's touch more complete.
Okay, amen. Fantastic. And look, I mean, this is not to say anything to the teenagers specifically, but just if you're a teenager and you're kind of getting this and your eyes have been opened and that kind of thing, you know, I remember when I first met Chris online that he was following along on our live stream at a young teenager. He's 14, 15 years old. And his parents still don't understand any of this stuff. He's doing it all on his own. And then when he got to get through high school and towards, you know, through that end of that high school journey, you know, he was dealing with all that high school stuff and everything else, and he went off on his own for a little while, but then he came back. But the thing is, he did this, just in case all of you can be encouraged, without any help except when he would call me. Okay, but he had enough courage to call and talk to me, and I talked to him, you know, on and off a few times during all of this journey. But this is something that he did the walk. He did the work, and now he's here. Okay? And look, do you want to talk about making decisions? You know, he realized that coming to, I guess it was Sukkot, you know, well, after all, COVID's got everything locked down, and I'm doing virtual school anyway. Maybe I could do virtual school over in Tennessee, so why don't I just come to Sukkot? And then he realized, well, I can keep doing virtual school. Why don't I just stay here? And then he just stayed. He just made, I mean, these are just decisions that are not the usual out of, you know, a young man like that, and I was very proud of him. And it wasn't because, just and again, make sure nobody thinks this, I mean, it wasn't because anybody here pressured him to do it. He just came up with these things. And I thought for sure he was just going to go home and, you know, like, just as annoying. And he came up and says, hey, I just figured out that, you know, they'll let me and they've approved it and I could do this here and I could just, and it's been great. But think about the mindset and the process is to go through all that by yourself as a teenager. And some of you are whining and complaining that you can't do this as a 56-year-old or a 42-year-old or whatever it is. Well, I don't have anybody else to do it with. He was 14, 15 when he started and got on the live stream. And so just think about that, okay? You can do this. All right. Ken?
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
And thank you also for allowing the time for us to ask questions.
Well, thank them for being patient while their stomachs grumble. But
mine's grumbling too. I'm not going to.
There you go. Because you know me, I could do this. You know, Billy actually puts on my calendar to go eat. It makes me leave. I mean, I would forget and just keep working. So.
Well, I want to share. I'm not going to use a short story. Excuse me. But similar to Frederick and Wayne, and you know, we've all captured something from today's teaching that was personal to us. So I wanted to enhance my personal experience with, and I've tried to condense this down while I was waiting. So I've condensed it to begin with your first. Most of the teaching that you were putting in chapter 3, which began at verse 14 and went all the way down to 21. But in 18, just as a starting point, where that is the that brings up the idea of firmly grasping, along with all the other set apart ones, what is the width, the length, the depth, and the height of what it is we're seeking. And that was, you know, that brought in the idea of our world. We're a four-dimensional world. We have length, width, breadth, and height. I mean, and time. Well, depth is also, I think depth is that description of time. Depth is the encompassing the fullness of what it is that we have in a mental state And for me, and for all of us, for us to develop depth, it takes time. And it takes time. We were talking about students, and I was in college, I was always cramming, and I would pass tests, but I found my greater success was if I would spend a little bit each day. Then when it became time for the examination, it was no effort, instead of trying to cram. So I'm finding also that to try to understand what it is we're trying to achieve is not so much cramming on Shabbat or trying to do these things that, oh, I'm going to pray now or what, but to do a little bit in each moment. So my wife and I, we were having this very conversation coming over here today. It's a two-hour drive coming here. We always have conversations. Sometimes we listen to your lessons and sometimes we read. Today I brought up the point, well, okay, Yeshua, if we're trying to achieve the mind of Yeshua in us, which is the Philippians 2:5. Yeshua was all in with the Father all day long, and when everyone else was resting, he was praying. His time was constantly with the Father. If I'm, and you brought up also Emunah, so Emunah would be the belief that everything is under the control of Yahweh, either he causes it or allows it. That's all the time. All of our time, there's something in our each and every day, that each and every moment, that has to do with believing that this moment was under the control of Yahweh. So I'm proposing my question to you that if I choose in my daily moment to drift away and spend time on something else and try to justify and maybe even catch myself, well, I could be doing that, but I'm going to just take my time and do this. This is going to be my time. Have I, in that moment, have I committed sort of a decision, a sinful thought? Because I've taken away the time from Yeshua that wants to be in my life. I've taken that away from him.
I wouldn't necessarily take it to that level. I mean, you have to understand. I'll use me as an example, okay? Because remember, Yeshua was not only Yeshua just being that perfect, like you said, in terms of his relationship with the Father and everything, but he had a role to play when he was here. He had a job to do. And so for some people, their job and their pleasure are the same thing. Okay? I prefer to do this than almost anything else. Now, if there's not this to do, then I may find some things to do. But I can do this and never stop doing this, as people who are in my house till 2 in the morning know. So, and I could have kept going, but they were tired. And so, you know, Yeshua, different from us in general, you know, he had a job to do, did it relentlessly during the opportunities when he was with people. And he wasn't always with people because he went and traveled around and he would often go off by himself. But he would go off by himself to basically recharge his batteries and so to speak, and get that time away from people needing him. And that's part of the ministry thing also, is we need time to get away from people needing us. Okay? And so we can get a little worn out on that. And so when you're looking at your life, he expects you to be you. He likes that you have joy and pleasures in art or music or hobbies or whatever it is that you like to do, all right? And so it's not that you're, you know, shouldn't be doing those things because you're taking away those moments you could have been doing something, but you can have him with you, like a friend being with you, you know, sharing those things with you. Because he wants you still to be what makes you Ken different than, you know, Wayne who was up there before, or Frederick who was up there before, or Justin who's coming up. I mean, you're different. And each one of them is different and brings their own unique sort of style and flavor and things like that. So it's when you're not affording him the time at all, or really giving him a minimal amount of time, that becomes more the problem. Okay, when you're not giving him the good quality time. Remember, we talked about when we do our tithes and offerings, one of the things I always say is that tithing is to teach us to always put Yahweh first in our lives. And really, it's to give him the best prime 10%, so to speak, as opposed to the afterthought leftover 10%. And so you want to make time for him, not when you're worn out, tired, and like, oh, I guess I got nothing else to do, I'll give him some time. But give him good quality time. And if you're doing that on a regular basis, he doesn't need all of your time. He needs all of your love. He wants you to love him with all your heart, with all your might. He wants you to transform and become him. But you know what? The creator of the universe made all the beautiful things you see. And some of you like things that are artistic. Well, he loves artistic things. He gave us the ability to make the music and create things and crafts and art and all the wonderful things that we enjoy as beautiful. Look at the mountains and the forests and all of the landscaping and the animals and all their varieties and the everything. It's just beautiful stuff. And so, you know, he had a lot of that. And so we also should be able to find ways to express those things and enjoy them.
To encourage that thought, that was also part of what I was thinking. Time, if we're doing it on a moment-by-moment basis, we're going to be able to appreciate the singing of the birds or the clouds in the sky or the beauty of the trees. And
so it's not a sinful thought to enjoy some of your time. Okay? All right, because it's not that he needs and wants all of your time, he wants all of your heart, okay? Now, he does want some of your time, and you need to give him that time. That's why, knowing how busy and distracted we are, that's why he gave us Shabbat, to kind of force you to give him time. And he gives you holy days to give him more opportunities to spend time with you, okay? Brianna.
So the whole point is loving him and loving each other and learning how to do that. In loving him, you have to make sure that nothing can separate that love that you have for him, or else you'll be like committing adultery.
You mean like neither death nor life?
Yeah.
Okay. We sang, for people watching this, we sang Brianna's song called that today. So.
So to be grounded and anchored in his love, you have to make sure that it's inseparable. And then with a husband and wife, it's like that same type of love. Like you can't have anything become in between the two of you. But this, as a body, to become one in unity with the body, do you have to have that kind of same intimacy level of love? Because I know it's a different type of love in between. Like there's a different kind of love between you and a husband, or you and a wife, or you and the father, and you and a body, but does the intimacy level have to be that same to become one in a unity?
No, I mean, not that way necessarily, but the intimacy, because intimacy is an interesting word. Intimacy, we want to understand, you have to know each other, which means you have to have a relationship. Now, that relationship may be more casual and more deep, depending on the other factors that connect you together. You know, we call this, well, I met this person, I couldn't believe how well we just hit it right off. Well, then you may develop a relatively deep relationship, or a good close relationship. And other people, you like them well enough, but you just don't have a lot of things in common and don't quite hit it off as well. That doesn't mean you don't like each other, but there's no expectation that we're going to have the same level of relationship with everybody. Because we're different, and we tend to have deeper relationships with people that are similar to us than the people that are very different from us. And so people tend to do that. But the other thing is, we don't want to turn into an all cliquish sort of way where we don't spend the time with people that are not so much like us, because they also challenge us to come out of our comfort zones to be with people that are not exactly like us. But as far as levels of intimacy, when you get married, you've chosen from all the other women of the world or all the other men, whichever side you're on in the marriage, the one person that you would like to have this level of relationship with. And no, you don't get to have, just like in a marriage, you don't get to be have that relationship with all the other people out there, only the one person. Well, the same thing in the body. You're going to have certain levels of relationships with people. Okay, you're not going to be friends with everybody, but you're going to be friendly to everybody. You'll be much more casually, politely and friendly, and just, hey, I'm glad to see you. How are you doing? Great. And others who you're going to talk about all your internal most problems and issues and stuff because you're close. You're friends, you know? Okay? And so this is going to happen in the body. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. And just another thing. Since you can choose to follow him and then you choose the fivefold or the teacher, teacher, but you really don't really get to pick and choose who he calls. So in the community, by showing love, is that like not judging and being patient? Is that where that kind of love comes in? Because you don't really get to choose who he picks to be a part of the community or the body.
Okay, I'm going to agree 100%, but I'm going to take it a little further. You don't, when you're looking for what you're looking for, you don't get to choose all the things that are connected. In other words, I'm looking for a fellowship. Oh, but I didn't want those people. But you said you wanted a fellowship. I'm looking for a teacher. Yeah, but I don't want that guy. Okay? But you said you wanted a teacher. Well, that's the teacher. But why did it have to be him? Okay? And so you come into a fellowship, and you're not going to just get along great with everybody, but you should get along with everybody. And so she makes a really good point there. You know, you don't get to choose those things. He brings you someplace because you needed to be in that someplace. And what you need, both positive and challenging, are going to be in the same place. Stuff to challenge you and stuff to bring you the joy of a natural fit. So some things will be natural fits. Some of them will just give you fits. Okay? And that was clever, but not what we're talking about here to avoid that cleverness, but that was clever. Okay, so, you know, just keep that in mind. Those are really good points that Brianna brought up. And actually, it was kind of really cool that your song that we sang today fit right into the teaching, so that was really good. Okay, Christian.
Shabbat shalom, Rabbi. I just have a short and simple question. Ephesians 4 mentions a fivefold ministry. Is there anywhere else it's mentioned in the scripture?
It's not mentioned in this way. The different individuals are mentioned, and they're held to very high esteem, whether it's apostles or teachers or shepherds or pastor. I mean, prophets and those kind of things. The evangelists aren't mentioned, not really anywhere that I can see that. But you can understand why in the functioning of a group, you need those that would be out there to get the word out that there's some other things that are going on. But you do absolutely see teachers, you see prophets, you see apostles. Apostles being, in the scripture, anybody sent out. Okay, one sent out with a task and a message is an apostle. It's called an emissary. The Hebrew is a shaliach, okay? And so the four of them, at least, you do see on a very regular basis. But no, Christian, you are correct in assessing that there's no place else where all of it is put together in this way. Okay? All right, so Paul's gathering a bunch of information saying, look, these guys exist. He's talking to people that knows that these guys exist. So he's not telling you, by the way, there's a thing called a prophet. No, he says, there are prophets. And the Creator puts them there for the perfecting of the saints. Now he's tying information they already have together so that people understand why they're there. He also wants you to know there are bad ones out there. And the good ones are there to help keep you away from being swayed all over the place by the ones that are not so good, that really aren't anointed and appointed to do those things. Okay? Now, they may actually be, like we talk about Yahweh causing and allowing. Well, they may be appointed from the point of view that he allowed them to have the role of being there to tempt and confuse you. Because that's got to be there as part of your struggle to find and hold on to when you find the real thing. And so they have to be allowed to be there. But, you know, what Paul's trying to say is you guys are familiar with these roles. Because he doesn't tell you about what the roles are at all. He just names people and roles that people are familiar with. He says, however, you don't seem to understand what their purpose is. And in the picture that he's painting since chapter 2, really, or 1, but we're going to be 3 and 4 specifically we're talking about here, he says, these guys are what you're going to need for that grounding and rooting and in love and all this other stuff we're talking about, walking worthily, etc. You need these guys. They're there to guide you. Okay, they're there for the perfecting. So perfecting meaning to give you the instruction in how to become the complete, full stature of Messiah at some point. Amen. All right, good question. Okay, live stream. And yes, I purposely jumped over there when it was Steve's turn next.
That's a good call.
It was a good call. Thank you. We're going to be known as the wise guy ministry.
Somebody had commented earlier when Billy was talking about Steve. He said, you know, somebody said that next time that somebody calls and asks for Steve, just forward them to the Waffle Man.
There you go. All right. And actually, some people may have been confused, Billy, because when you said, when they call me Steve or whatever, you said Stephen Berkson is maybe whatever, because my son is Stephen. And, you know, he may have been saying that when people call in and he's working over at Sonic or wherever, but they, you know, that my son has the same name. So they may not have followed that if they don't know, but that was, you know, a good point. All right, Rob.
Okay, from Greg Wallen, says, Rabbi, when we realize we slacked off or lost momentum, the need arises to call, quote unquote, time and huddle up in order to get back out there and leave everything on the field. Who do we huddle up with?
Okay, well, that's when you make a phone call. And myself, Billy for sure, Rabbi Tom, we have two shoes that work really good to motivate. When you need a little kick in the tuchus, as they would say in Yiddish. Because that's what you need. You need somebody. You need a buddy. You need somebody in the ministry. You need somebody. It doesn't matter who it is. You need a man or a woman. If it's a woman, you need a friend who you can go to and say, I'm just not motivated right now. I'm not driven. Who can just encourage you and also kind of give you that shove to keep going. Look, it's like when you call it like a personal trainer might be if you're in the gym. Okay, you're there and you're doing it, but you have somebody saying, come on, you can do one more. Let's go. One more. One more. You need somebody in your life to say, you can do this. Let's go. I don't feel like it. You know, if you've got a good workout partner, for example, that workout partner is going to call you up and say, let's go to the gym. What do you mean? Get in the car. Let's go. But you have to have a friend like that or someone who works in your office that thinks that we can do that. Never mind. Except she wants us to go at 5 in the morning or 4:30. Not happening. Okay. So, but she tries. Anyway, did that answer the question? All right, so who do you call? Calling here is a great idea. But if you have somebody that you've agreed, remember, two can't walk together if they agree. If you know, because Greg, you're in the Marco Polo group, you know a lot of the guys. Because I think, was it Greg Wallen asked this question? Yeah. So Greg, you know a lot of the guys. All you need is somebody in the group that you know has your back and you have theirs, and you give them permission, hey, when I'm running into complacency and I'm not motivated or whatever, and I call you up, can you just give me that encouragement and give me maybe a swift kick or something to wake me up and it could be anybody. But they have to have the right relationship with you. It has to be by agreement, okay? And Greg, since I know you, I'm more than happy to do that. As you should know, you've counseled with me before. Okay.
Okay, last one. From Michael Ashley Condon says a question: How to uncut the umbilical cord and let them grow? If it's been ingrained in our heads that one of my children wouldn't grow, how do I change my mindset?
Okay, these are good questions. I think I covered this a little bit in one of the up to the challenges at Unleavened Bread or whatever. But look, when it comes to parenting, you. And we're not talking about, okay, in Michael's case, you know, he's got some children that are challenged, okay? And so some of those children may need more help, like maybe even forever. It just depends. Developmentally, they may get to a point, but they may need some more help. I had a nephew that has a chromosome syndrome where he's not really all that capable to just be by himself and handle his own things. He can do a lot of things, but he really needs to be with some people. And I think he might have been capable of doing more than he actually got allowed to do. But, you know, but we're talking about, let's take your average, reasonably sound, healthy child, okay? Which means that they're still crazy, just like the rest of us, but in the spectrum of normal crazy, right? And normal challenges and normal handicaps, because all of us are handicapped. So you take that average, normal, messed up person, at some point they're going to live on their own. And they're going to have skill sets to do that and make their own mistakes and then fix them and adjust to them and handle them and things like that without you necessarily always being there like you did when they were 6 and 7 and 8. And so your role then is to prepare them. Now, when they're younger, they're not ready and they don't have the capacity to understand a lot of things. So you just tell them, do this, don't do that. Listen to what mommy says, listen to what daddy says, and we're going to make sure everything's okay. We'll take care of you. As they get into that teenager weird space, where they're not a kid, they're not an adult, you as a parent have to change too. They're going through puberty. You need to go through parenting puberty. Well, change, I invented the word, okay? Which means you have to change from what you thought to do when treating them as a child to how do I change now to hopefully becoming their trusted advisor? Because that's all you're going to be able to give at some point is advice, because you will have no authority. Some of you think, don't have any now, and they're teenagers. Well, then what do you think is going to get any better when they move out? And so you have to be preparing them for that independence. And you want to be encouraging them that the independence is in your future. And not that I want to throw you out, but that you should be able to move out anytime after 18. Now, if you're not, I'm happy for you to stay. And we'll work that out in a way that you understand my expectation, your expectation for having multiple adults in the house. Because I still want him to have him, in this case I say him because my son's going to be the first one, 18. I still want him to have a certain amount of independence, but he's also in my house. So there has to be a certain amount of respect for it's my house, right? So I can't allow just anything to happen in the house. But I have to give him a certain amount of authority because I want him to now experience adulthood, which means making choices. But the only place to really do that in its complete essence, is outside the house. And so people need to move out. Now, it's getting hard and expensive and all those challenges to move out. So it's okay if it's not 18, but it's 20 or 21. But while they're going from 18 to 20 or 21, they should be given more and more opportunity to make their own decisions. Like, you don't necessarily need to still get in their face about what time they come home. Now, you may, as an advisor, say, I noticed that you came home at 1 in the morning and you have to go to work at 8. That's not going to work if you do that every day, okay? You're going to burn yourself out. You may, because you're in your house, say, look, if you're going to be late or a certain time, I would like it if you told me, so I don't worry about you. But at that point, you still may decide they should have authority over what they do and when they do it. Because how else are they going to understand how to have authority when they move out over what they do and when they do it? You have to give them that, okay? And then let them buy things themselves and do other things themselves so they can realize when they spend money stupidly and when they spend it wisely and those kind of things. There's things that you can do to help them transition. But to Michael's question is, if you don't start getting them used to that idea, they're not going to be able to do it when they get out. But also on the other side of it, if you've done that well and they're ready to go out, keeping them in isn't helping things either. Because they need to go out. That's how you get, if the butterfly can't stay in the cocoon, okay? It has to get out, okay? And spread its wings, etc. Now, hopefully you've now gotten yourself to the place where you are the valued and respected advisor. But that only comes from you developing a relationship beyond do this, don't do that. Didn't I tell you to clean your room? Didn't I tell you to do this? How come you didn't? There has to be more than that where you sit and listen to them. And you know them. And you have to do like Anna, where people are comfortable to talk to you. Your children have to be comfortable to talk to you if you're going to accomplish this, okay? But that only happens if you make the effort to make it comfortable for them to talk to you, okay? Both my children talk to me, but I've made the effort to do that. They come to me and talk to me, and I'll sit there. Look, there's times when I'm tired and because I've been getting up earlier and everything else, and my son will close at his restaurant and come home, and I know he's going to want to talk, and I will stay there and let him talk. Even though he got in at 1 in the morning, and I'll sit there, and he'll talk, and I'll listen to him. And it's not anything important necessarily. He just needs that relationship with me. That's all talk. Or my daughter will come back from something, and she'll just want to talk, and I'll just say, okay, I'll give you time, and we'll sit, and we'll talk. Because, now this is going to sound maybe a little strange or maybe make perfect sense, they have to like you. Otherwise, they're never going to want to listen to you in that relationship with you. They have to actually like you. Oh, but they have to love me. Yeah, they have to always going to love you. You're the mother. You're the father. But you don't necessarily love everybody you like. I mean, like everybody you love. Okay? But you want them to like you. If they like you, they want to talk to you. They want to listen to you. They will start to, they'll believe that what you say is because you have the relationship with that you care about them. And they might take your advice. Or they might not. But at least they'll listen and hear it and say, okay, I'll consider that. Because you know what? At some point, and my wife and I are transitioning to this. My son was out, and he worked a little later than we thought. We didn't really know where he was as far as like, why wasn't he back here? We got a little nervous and stuff. But I told her, I said, you know what? One day, he's not going to be living here, and we're not going to know where he is most of the time. She's like, no, we're going to leave this tracker on the phone on. No, we're not. Yeah, I can see on my phone here he's at work. No. Okay? We do that now because he's under 18 and we want to kind of, you know, make sure my children are safe so we have a way to know where they are. But I told her, I said, I understand why you're upset and nervous because she got nervous. He was fine. But yet, at the same time, I said, this is only a few more years, if that much, and he's not even going to be in the house, and we're not going to know mostly where he's... Your mother and father don't know what you do after you got moved out of the house, and my parents don't know, have any idea unless I call them and say, by the way, you know, I'm doing this or that. How do you deal with that? You have to trust Abba. You've given the child up to Abba, and you have to trust what you've given them, and you have to also trust that if you have a good enough relationship with them, they will want to talk to you and ask your counsel when they do things. But man, that doesn't happen by default. It takes effort to make the time. I don't mean effort like it's like arduous work, but you, I mean, I had to decide to either say, oh, I'm glad you're home now, good night, or just realize, you know what, he wants to unwind and talk a little bit about his day. Let me sit here until like 1:30 or 2 in the morning and listen to it. And so I had to make that choice. And I'd make that choice every time. I'm going to give him time. I'm going to give my daughter time. Either one. Now, I know sometimes I can't give it right when they want it because I'm doing something that I have to do at a particular moment. I say, I'll do this with you later. But if I don't have anything that I have to do, it's only something I want to do, I can put my wants on the side and be with them. Did you understand that? Because there are a few times when I'm counseling somebody or doing something else, I say, I can't do this with you right now, but I'll do it as soon as I'm done. But if it's just something like, I want to go to sleep or I can or talk to you, well, no, I'm going to give you the time. And I do that with them. And so this is part of how you develop that relationship. And guess what? As they get older, those conversations lead to opportunities to say, can I recommend something? You know, my suggestion is, and those kind of things that I say, like those kind of little phrases. And they're listening now and receiving it because we have a whole different relationship. Hey, that's great, but you know what? What about doing this next time? Hey, but maybe you want to try that, or maybe that wasn't such a good thought to do, and now you realize it. But they're receiving it different, because I'm trying to share it as respected, valued counselor, not as, see, I told you that was stupid. Why'd you do that? You should have asked me. Now I'm talking down to them like they're 12 again, okay? And you can't do that when they're 17, 18, 19. There's no way. Because all you're going to do is have them get more and more mad at you, resent you, and not want to have anything to do with you. Why would you want that? This is your kid. You love this child, right? I told my son early on, I said, it's very important to me that always we will be best buddies. Somehow I will work that out. Not that he had to work it out, that I would work it out. I didn't expect him to just be my buddy no matter what I did. Okay? That we would work that out and develop that to whatever that looked like with me and him. And my daughter and I have the same thing, but it's different because she's different than he's different, right? So we have it differently, but we're that close because we work at it. And I'm not making this up just so you guys are all impressed with me. I want you to know I've worked hard at this for many years. Started early, okay? Like as soon as puberty hit, my puberty hit too. I had to learn how to be a different type of parent, all right? I'm just saying, I had to learn how to transition into a different, right? From child to teenager is a transition. And I couldn't keep treating them the same as I did before that all went in the hormones and the emotions and the interaction with other children that they do in a totally different level. I had to change too, you know? Recognizing they have their own thoughts and ideas. And awareness of what's happening in the world, and there are different opinions about it than maybe than I have, and you know. Anyway, I'm sorry we've taken this all the way to 6 o'clock, and we've got two more people going. Let's see if we can do these really quickly. That was important. I hope that you guys got that. Okay? And I hope my children were not too offended that I used them in the teaching, but I think they looked good in everything I said. I mean, I made them, you know, there wasn't anything that should be embarrassing. Go ahead, Mr. Steve.
Okay, I have several. I'll just read them and then stop me if you want.
Stop. Okay.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Okay, in the beginning at 3:15, it said that he might give you...
We've not been doing this since 3:15. No, about 3:15, probably.
Yeah. But okay. What I want to point out is...
Ephesians 3:15.
Yes. But even though he's given, we need to be ready to receive, even if it's not the way we would want it to be given.
Exactly. Now, the reason that works is because you trust the source. You trust what's happening. So what he said was, we need to be able to receive, even if it's not coming in the form we wanted to receive. Well, you can't really do that unless you trust where the source is of that, where it's coming from. If you trust where it's coming from, you'll take it in whatever form it comes. All right, go ahead.
Okay, and then in 17, it talked about dwelling in your heart. So the question to me would be, how can he dwell in our heart if our heart is full of things that will take us in other directions?
Absolutely.
And then the other thing was, I guess it went to 4, is talked about walking worthy. So what we need to remember when it comes to the definition of walking worthy is his definition, not our own definition.
Amen.
4:14, it talked about the craftiness of leading astray. But what we don't realize, I believe, is sometimes it's our own understanding that will lead us down the wrong direction.
Excellent point. We didn't cover that at all. But you know what? Some of you think you're so crafty and clever and figure out all these things, and then you got it all figured out, and then now you're going off in that direction that nobody's ever been before. What do you think? You're on Star Trek to go where no one's gone before. But you got to be careful when you think that you're being so good and you discovered things. I've got people contact me almost every week that think they figured everything out or some unique piece out. And maybe they have, maybe they haven't, but you know, it's a dangerous, well, potentially dangerous line. Okay, I'm not saying that you could not have figured it out. And maybe you're clever, maybe you did figure it out. But realize, more often than not, you will not have. And your belief that you have will get you in trouble. Okay, Steve?
Okay, and then in 4:15, it talked about we grow up in all aspects, and that means everything, not just what we want to.
I appreciate 15, but I stopped in 14, but that's okay.
Okay, and then I just had a thought, because I've always heard the quote, I guess, is patience is a virtue, but to me, patience is required. Virtue comes with your actions.
Oh, I like that. Well said. Very good. And your point about 15 was good. I just was teasing you because we didn't get there. Okay. All right. Justin, you'll be last. Well, you said you're done on the stream? Okay, you're good. Okay, Justin, finish us up.
All right. I just had a couple comment. I had a comment question and then a comment. So I was looking at here where he talks about grasping in 18, and it made me think about what you were talking a couple weeks ago about the monkeys putting their fist in and grabbing that fruit. I think that we need to grasp to the point where literally we would not let go of the word, even if our life depends on it.
Okay, excellent.
And then I noticed, I was just looking over there, and what is it, 4:14 says, so that we should no longer be children. This entire book talks about us being the children of Israel, and here it says there's a possibility we can actually grow up.
Amen. And I pray for that every day. Amen. Okay, just real quick for people that don't know what I said about the monkeys. Okay, so the TV show was just okay. The albums weren't bad. No. Okay. What Justin was referring to was, I don't know if it's true, but what I've heard was that one of the ways that they capture spider monkeys is that they take a gourd or something, you know, that they can strap down to a tree, wherever it is, or to put it on a rope so that it's attached, and they put a hole in it so they can put a little fruit in there. But the hole's just big enough for the fruit to go through or their spider monkey's hand, but the hand holding the fruit can't come out. okay? And the spider monkey would go in there, stick its hand in there, grab the fruit, and be so clinging and clasping and not letting go, so to speak, you could walk right up and put a, you know, a leash around it and or whatever you need, a collar on, etc., because it's not going anywhere. It's focused on, now it could be free if it just would let go of the fruit, pull its hand out. But it can't pull its hand out and the fruit. And so Justin was saying, hey, let's hold on to the fruit of the Ruach, the fruit of the Torah, the fruit of Messiah, that's okay. You can try to do whatever you want to me. I'm not letting go. I appreciate that. Listen, I hope that was a blessing to everyone. I enjoyed it. I hope that didn't you enjoy it too? I know this runs long, but you know what? There's so much. I always feel like we cut short even though we go longer. Because there's so much stuff. And you know, it's funny because we've had some people of late who kind of wanted more. Well, just read the verses and read this and talk about like the mechanics of stuff. And you know, this verse actually says the inner man is what it's all about. So I'm glad that we got to talk about that today. You know, and it's really funny too. I was thinking about it as we're spending all this time in this last 8 or 10 or 15 parts of this teaching. For the people that do, I know I had a reputation at one point of like, when is Rabbi ever going to use anything from the New Testament? We've been here for months. Okay, so, you know, because there was a time where I was giving a lot of the teaching, and most of the teaching on the how to, what, everything else, that all came out of the Tanakh. And so we spent a ton of time in the Tanakh. But now look at all this time we're spending in the Brachah Hadashah. A long time. All right, do we got everybody now?